Accession number 29424, reel number 10.
Another level to be diplomatic and uncontroversial.
Yes.
You know, and they're both bits of me.
Yeah. And probably, you know, the world is like that, isn't it? Very complex.
Yeah.
And there's no good and evil.
And so I can respect the people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I must say, I can respect the people like Michael Bordeaux who go straight for justice. You know, I'm going to demand justice and I'm not going to make any compromises. I can respect that. I'm afraid the other extreme of the absolute diplomats who, you know, who in the end become fellow travellers. They're so nice to the other side that in the end you can't distinguish them from the other side. You know, and I'm afraid that form of extremism, and I've got friends who were in that camp, who, you know, went who were so opposed to the Cold War and so opposed to the evils of the West that they closed their eyes to the evils of communism.
Yes, yes.
And although I can kind of understand them, in the end I find it difficult to respect them.
Yes, you're far more complex, aren't you?
Yeah.
Because of perhaps your connection with the complexity of these things, I would think, right from your very early age.
Yeah.
And, you know, how you relate to the rejected because of what happened to you.
Yeah, I think my personal history explains my complexity.
Yes.
And of course, being complex, it often means that other people don't understand you or misunderstand you. So that the people who thought I was a fellow traveller, if they were, you know, completely dedicated to defeating communism, you know, people like me were stood in their way.
Yes. Yes.
And so the Cold Warriors would misunderstand me, but the go along with communism people would also misunderstand me and regard me as a cover. They would say, he pretends to be the friend of the communists, but he's not really. He's really a Cold Warrior in disguise.
Mm.
Which is largely what the regimes in Eastern Europe thought about me when you read the files.
Yeah. But you can't win.
You can't win.
Someone in your position.
No, you're in one sense, in a win-win position, in that you can play it both ways. But in another sense, you're also in a lose-lose position.
Yes.
And that's life, the way I've chosen it, you know.
Yes. And I know you've gone to China, haven't you? You know, China is a very interesting country, isn't it, because of its history.
Yeah.
And, you know, its rise today as an economic power. But, again, you visited China and, you know, met the Chinese leadership. But
no, I haven't met the Chinese leadership.
Well, you've met prominent people there.
Only prominent Christians.
Yes, prominent Christians. I've
never met the communist leadership of China. And I've only been once, and I went as an observer of a World Council of Churches delegation.
But do you have to apologise for going to China?
Oh, no.
And interacting as you did in the communist Western world.
Well, I've never had to apologise for anything I've done. But, I mean, going to China, nobody suspected that that was any kind of fellow. You know, that was a straightforward church attempt to understand China, which was totally uncontroversial. You know, nobody has ever suggested that it was a controversial thing to do. I was the British representative on a delegation of 16 people from 16 different countries. Each one of us came from a different country, and each one of us represented the church in that country. And I feel slightly flattered that I was the one British Christian chosen for that delegation. I suppose they chose me because they knew I had a lot of experience of communist countries in Eastern Europe and so on, but I'd never been to China. I'd never been an expert in China. So I went as a pure observer, and I never commented on the situation because you've got to be much more knowledgeable to say anything really intelligent about a country with such a complex history and such extraordinary things that, you know, it was just a kind of eye-opener to me how complex it was. And it certainly won't make a chapter of my book. You know, it's just one outsider popping in for a month. A month, what's that? No, it's nothing. To get to know a country of such magnitude. And, you know, it was fascinating. And I'm glad I went. But I said to myself, I'm not going back. There's just, I can't really encompass this in as part of my sphere of knowledge and interest. It's fascinating. But I was a kind of tourist and not much more. And didn't even talk. Of course, I realized that I was talking to the official Christians who were mandated by the state to talk to me. So I realized all the way along that I was getting the official point of view from those Christians. I wasn't even talking to Christian dissidents, of whom there are many in China, but I didn't have a chance to meet them.
Yes, but at least I suppose there are Christians, you know, allowed in China today, which wouldn't have been the case.
Under Mao, they were all underground.
Yes.
Now they're overground, but controlled. There's an awful lot of them. I mean, statistically, because China is so huge, the total number of Christians in China is substantially larger than the total number of Christians in Britain. It's still statistically a tiny proportion, but in absolute terms, it's a very large number of people. I preached while I was there to a congregation of 5,000 in a city of 8 million.
So when you preach, this would be a sermon, would it?
This was a sermon.
And it was translated?
It was sentence for sentence into Chinese, yeah. Yeah, sentence for sentence into Chinese. And
yes, but that must have been...
Singing 19th century English evangelical hymns in Chinese. I mean, I knew the tunes because what the missionaries had brought. And they're still... They're basically still where the missionaries were that came in the 19th century. They haven't changed their kind of religion. It's very conservative.
This is really very fascinating, I think. And I think we'll probably leave it there today, if that's all right with you, Paul, because the other topics we will be going on to, you know, if you wouldn't mind giving...
I mean, for your research, I mean, I don't think you'll ever run out of subjects and people. You're so fascinating in what you do. I'm full of admiration for it. But if you would talk to Bob and Maggie White...
Yes.
Then you would get a deep insight into the West and China. But again, it's me that is unable to happen. I mean, I have had a major role in this Chinese thing in that when I became vicar of Blackheath, about 6 weeks later, a young man wearing a Mao suit and a Mao badge arrived on my doorstep, a young English Maoist. This was 1969. And he said, I'm Bob White. I was chairman of the SCM at Cambridge University when you came to talk to us about 3 years ago. I've never forgotten your talk. But I'm now deeply convinced that the future of the world lies with China. And, you know, I'm a young Maoist, and so is my young wife. The trouble is, I wanted to become an Anglican priest. My father's one, and I've completed my studies. But now I can't see that I could work in such a reactionary body as the Church of England, and I don't know what to do. Can you give me some advice? And I said, Bob, you're a very bright guy. The church needs people like you who disagree with where it's at and who can challenge it. I don't necessarily agree with all your Maoism, but I respect it. Again, you know, it's, I can see where you're at, and it's really where I was at when I was a student, and it wasn't so much China because I didn't know enough about it. I got a proposition to you. If you're really into China and believe it's the future of the world, why don't you get ordained, because you've completed your training for ordination. Why don't you get ordained in this diocese? I will persuade my bishop to ordain you. Become my curate. And I will give you freedom that curates wouldn't normally have. I will expect you to do three things. I don't think I said this spontaneously on the day he came to see me. I think I asked him to come back later because I thought this through, you know. I said, I would expect you to do three things, you and your young wife. And his wife had also studied theology. I would expect you to spend a third of your time doing what any other young curate has to do, visiting old and sick people and preaching the odd sermon and, you know, learning, but only a third of your time. I would expect you, for one third of your time, to learn Chinese and to study China thoroughly. And that will leave another third of your time, and I'm not going to leave you much spare time, to live in a commune with other people. Because that was the great thing, you know, in the 60s, communes and living like Chairman Mao says we should live in communes. There's a house around the corner owned by the hospital board, and I know they don't know what to do with it. They're not using it. It's empty. They'll let the parish have it for a peppercorn rent. I'll rent that house. You'll live in it with your young wife and find other people who need community. They might be drug addicts, they might be God knows what. You'll live with others in community and see how you get on. And Bob went away and came back a week later and said, Maggie and I have thought and prayed about it. You're on. And Bob and Maggie became the secretary of the British China Friendship Society. Bob became the greatest expert in England on the history of Christianity in China, and he wrote The History of Christianity in China as a book. He became eventually advisor to the Archbishop of Canterbury on China. Has long ceased being a Maoist, saw through the weaknesses of the system by studying it, and is now vicar of a parish in Tunbridge Wells.
Not Shanghai.
Not Shanghai. But the two of them have really devoted their life to friendship with China. Mm-hmm. Maggie has gone every year and taken groups to China ever since then. And they're a fascinating couple. And sometimes when I'm asked, what have you achieved in your parish ministry? I say, well, really very little, nothing spectacular, except that I've enabled this couple to do the most remarkable things. And I sometimes say it's the most valuable thing I did in my parish ministry.
Well, it's a very interesting story, isn't it? And the way you worked out what he should do.
Yeah. Mm. You know, I set him out on the road to becoming an expert on China and to stop wearing a Mad Mao badge.
No doubt you had his advice when you went there.
He briefed. Well, he in fact briefed the whole delegation because, you know, he was such an expert by then and he'd been every year. I mean, he knew China and its problems backwards. So he prepared me better than anybody else could have for a brief visit like that.
Thank you, Paul.